You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
In a 15-minute period, is it correct to say that there was a much more dramatic drop in temperature in your test scenario one than what actually occurred on John O'Keefe's phone for the time period we just covered in January 29th?
Yes.
And then with regard to even test scenario two, where the temperature is 33.8 degrees, that's the ambient, the outdoor temperature,
correct,
right? At that temperature, just above freezing, you've got a...
That's below freezing.
I'm sorry?
It's below freezing.
What is freezing in Fahrenheit?
I don't know, but it's 0 degrees Celsius.
Right.
And it was -5 degrees Celsius at the time.
Right. But would you agree that, and I want to be fair to you because I know you use Celsius more,
yes,
than Americans who use Fahrenheit. But would you agree that 32 degrees Fahrenheit is the freezing point in Fahrenheit?
I honestly wouldn't know.
Okay, fair enough. So, in any event, in your experiment at 33.8 degrees Fahrenheit, you're getting a drop in your experiment in 13 minutes of 30.6 degrees, right?
Correct.
But much less drop in temperature on slide deck 60 of the actual iPhone of John O'Keefe on the morning of January 29th, correct?
Yes, correct.
Do you know what the temperature was in Canton in January 29th, 2022?
I do not know.
Don't you think that would be an important piece of information in analyzing where the phone of John O'Keefe was on the morning of January 29th?
I didn't think it was.
So you didn't think it was important, even though you issued a report discussing the temperature of the iPhone and you did two test scenarios, one in a freezer, one in an ambient temperature of slightly above 33 degrees, and you didn't think it important to take the final step to see whether there was anything to be gained from that comparison to determine where that phone was located?
My testing proved that the battery temperature is affected by ambient temperature. My report shows the data that was on the device. I also don't know the condition that the phone was found in, whether it was in a case, whether it was in a pocket. So to me, the ambient temperature in Canton at the time wasn't particularly relevant. I just wanted to show what data the device had recorded.
The information that you create from your digital forensics analysis, including everything that's in the slide, in your report, including battery you want that, sir? I'll go back to the question. In digital forensics, you work with law enforcement often, correct?
Correct.
And you work in law enforcement in investigating cases, do you not?
Yes.
And so oftentimes, the law enforcement is using your digital forensics information to help them solve cases, correct?
Correct.
You didn't suggest to anybody on law enforcement that they might want to take a look at this temperature information to assist in determining where this phone could have been by the temperature? You never raised that with them?
I did not.
And do you know whether any law enforcement person was aware that you had done all this temperature analysis?
It was in my report.
So you create a report as part of this case, and you deem the temperature important enough to do two test scenarios, important enough to put it in a slide presentation to this jury. Yet there's no discussion of that between you and any member of law enforcement as to what it means?
The details were provided in my report and there was discussions, but it never came up as to say what was the temperature in Canton that night.
Oh, so there were discussions?
Not with law enforcement.
Oh, who
as
were the
part of my preparations for trial.
Oh, tell me about who you discussed this temperature information with.
It was with Hank.
You're hesitating, and I can't hear you. Who did you discuss
with
it
Hank.
With? Excuse me?
With Mr. Brennan.
Attorney Brennan?
Sorry. Yes.
You discussed temperature with Prosecutor Brennan?
It was in my report.
It was in your report, but you said you discussed. Which is it?
It's in my report, and the discussion was that it is in my report. I'm not in a position to suggest that investigations take place and change based on my report findings.
Oh, sir, I'm not suggesting what you just stated. I'm just trying to get information about, mm-hmm. You mentioned the verb disgust, didn't you, in your
yes,
answer moments ago?
Yes.
Isn't disgust a verbal thing? It's not a written thing?
It was discussed in preparation for trial, yes.
Oh, so there was a discussion, a verbal discussion with Attorney Brennan about temperature in your preparation for trial?
Yes.
Was there any interest at all as to what this could actually mean for the potential location of Mr. O'Keefe's phone on these very important time periods in January 29th that might assist to determine at various times whether Mr. O'Keefe is in a covered building based upon the temperature rather than outside in a nor'easter on January 29th?
I'm sorry, what was the question there?
Yeah, the question is, was there any discussion about the investigative value of what you had done in determining where that phone could have been on key time periods on the morning of January 29th?
That wasn't part of the discussion, no.
It wasn't part of the discussion. We went through, you may recall in my questioning, in your report, where you stated that it was possible that the phone could be inside the house of 34 Fairview based upon that big white circle. You testified that the low accuracy at certain points could be because of it entering a covered building, correct?
Correct.
And you do a temperature experiment to track the very accurate temperature change of an iPhone, and it doesn't match up the actual data with either of your test scenarios, and you don't raise that with anybody.
Objection.
Sustained. You can ask it differently.
Did you ever put together in any kind of form your test scenario one, your test scenario two, and the actual temperature chart of the iPhone of Mr. O'Keefe?
So how do you mean put it together? As in compare the two?
Exactly. Compare the two and reach any conclusions about location, because you spent time, did you not, sir, a lot of time in your reports on location of the phone?
Yes.
But yet, with all that data, all that testing, all the experiments that you did, you didn't include in your slide presentation and you didn't include in your report what that could mean for the location of the phone, did you, sir?
I'm struggling to see the comparison there.
Let me see if I can ask it in a different
Please.
Way. Nowhere in your slide presentation did you have any discussion yesterday about how your test scenario, did you bring up, by the way, in your slide presentation yesterday, your battery temperature at all, your tests?
Not the tests, no.
Right, so you didn't even raise yesterday in your presentation about where the phone might be located, you didn't even raise the experiments that you did, correct?
Objection.
Sustained us to the terminology. Ask it differently.
Did you yesterday, in your presentation to the jury, in any way, discuss your battery test scenario 1 and 2 in your March 2025 report?
I believe there was mention of testing, but not to the amount of detail to say what the testing was.
Right. So there was no detail given at all
about
it?
No detail.
You just mentioned that it occurred, but no detail in your discussion
Correct.
At all? And are you aware with regard to the battery temperature that battery temperature in investigations can be used to determine locations of phones at certain times? Are you aware of that?
No.
So you have never used battery temperature information in all your years in any way for any investigation of a case in determining location of a phone?
Again, I don't see how you can determine location of a device from a temperature reading other than to say whether it was inside or outside.
So battery temperature and the chart that you gave that is up there, in your opinion, has no relevancy to the topic of where a phone might be to investigators in a case? Is that what you're saying?
Objection.
Is that what you're saying, Mr. Whiffen?
I'm saying I can't take a temperature reading and make a determination about a GPS location based on the temperature reading.
That's not my question, though,
okay,
sir, and I appreciate your answer, though. My question is, you work with law enforcement investigators regularly,
yes,
correct? Isn't this information of potential relevance based upon your experience with investigations, isn't this information at least potentially relevant in investigations?
I believe it could be. That's why I included it in my report.
Thank you. But you didn't include a discussion of it in your testimony in you yesterday, correct?
Correct.
I just want to be clear on a final point on as regards to temperature. Were you aware of the temperature in Canton on January 29th, 2022?
I know it was a blizzard, but I don't know what the temperature was.
May I have a moment to switch
Sure.
topics? Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Whiffen. I'll be right back. Your Honor, if I may, I have one last point to make with temperature. If we could put deck 60 back up, please. Mr. Whiffen, if you bear with me, I just have one final set of questions. If you look at this chart, and you, under January 29th at 12:13, battery temperature of 82 degrees, But you then go down, what I'd like to start with is 1237 again. And this is a key time point, 1237. You've got a temperature of 72 degrees. And then 8 minutes later, the temperature only drops 6 degrees, correct?
Correct.
Again, using 1237 is what I refer to as the baseline. You go all the way down, and you see to 1253 a temperature drop of only 11 degrees. Do you see that?
I do.
Thank you. That you can, excuse me, Your Honor, one moment.
Okay.
The final data point on this slide, Mr. Whiffen, and thank you for bearing with me on this. At 136, there's a temperature of 50 degrees Fahrenheit, correct?
Correct.
Several hours later, at 6:06, 4.5 hours, the temperature drop is only 7 degrees, correct?
Correct.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
May I have exhibit 42, please?
What is exhibit 42?
It's...
Okay, thank you. We've got it. Thank you, Tori.
May I hand this to the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Mr. Whiffen, I'm handing you exhibit 42.
Yes.
Do you recognize exhibit 42 from your March 2025 report?
I do.
And sir, just take a fair time to familiarize yourself with the exhibit before I start asking you questions. They're going to be very brief. And I'm going to be, you look what you need to, but I'm going to be focusing on just under detailed analysis communications on paragraph 3, on page 43, the top 3 or 4 entries.
Okay.
Tell me when you're ready, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. Your Honor, may I have 43, which is in evidence published?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Wolf, please. And if you could enlarge, we don't need the text, so if we can just go to detailed analysis, communication, call history, and now if you could just super enlarge the first few entries. Yes, that is great. So what I want to do is just cover the information here. Whose phone is the subject of the entries on this chart?
Mrs. John's phone.
And if we start with the first entry reading left to right, 12:14:36, end time 12:15:20, incoming call from Jen McCabe. Duration 44 seconds. You see that, sir?
I do.
You see, and is that a call that is answered?
Yes.
If you go to the next entry, 18:47, just 12:18:47 to 12:19:23, outgoing call, duration 36 seconds to Jen McCabe. Duration 36 seconds. Do you see that, sir?
I do.
Is that a call that is answered?
Difficult to say. That could be a outgoing call that lasted 36 seconds of ringing, but I believe it was answered.
Well, how is it that you can tell the first one was answered but not the second one?
Because it's an incoming call.
Okay, fair enough. So if we go to the third entry, 12:29:44, 12:29:51, incoming call from Jen McCabe. You see that, sir?
I don't mean to drop. Could I ask about the display?
Give me just a second. I'm told this seems like an appropriate time to take our morning recess, so why don't we take a 15 or 20 minute recess?
Please rise for the jury. The jurors, right this way, please, leave your notebooks closed. On your chairs, please. Court is in session, please be seated.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I approach, please?
Yes.
I have a replacement.
Okay.
So, Your Honor, I have a replacement Exhibit 42 redacted, obviously to place Exhibit 42, and it's per stipulation with Mr. Brennan. Okay. May I present it to Mr. Whitman?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Whitman. May I publish, Your Honor?
Yes.
And Mr. Wolf, if you could again please enlarge, we're going to be focusing on the top entry of the chart again. May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Mr. Whiffen, we had started going through the top three entries. The first one you had indicated was answered. The second one you, as I understand it, could not tell. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then the third entry, which is reading left to right, 12:29:44, end time 12:29:51. Incoming call, duration 8 seconds, from Jen McCabe.
Correct.
That's the third one. So because it's an incoming...
So, Mr. Lessie, we need to enlarge this.
Okay, Your Honor. Mr. Wolf, can you enlarge that pursuant to the judge's order? Is that sufficient, Your Honor?
If you can make it as large as possible for the jurors, please, even if you have to do smaller segments.
If we have to, Mr. Wolk, knock off the final right-hand column, that's insignificant. There you go.
All right, that's better. Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. So I want to now go to the last one for this Exhibit 42. It's reading from left to right, 1229.44, 1229.51, incoming call duration 8 seconds from Jen McCabe. Again, it restates duration 8 seconds.
Correct.
Given that it's an incoming call, you can conclude that that was answered, correct?
Correct.
Now, if we could go back down and focusing on just the first three by way of example, Mr. Wolf, do just as Her Honor has requested, enlarge it as large as possible, those three, after the first three, yep, starting there, just take the first three by way of example. All right. Mr. Whiffen, you should feel free to look at the hard copy Exhibit 42 if that's more helpful to you. But what I want to do is to focus on start time 12:33:35, reading across activity, incoming call unanswered, and then to the right, Karen Reed. Do you see that, sir?
I do.
And do you see the same types of entries for 3409 and 3438?
I do.
And those calls are unanswered, correct?
Correct.
So in contrast to the, now Mr. Wolker, we can go back to the chart, trying to capture six and enlarge those one last time. Thank you. So in the first one at 1436 and then skipping one to 2944, those are answered, but then starting, excuse me, at 3335 and 3409, those are unanswered, correct?
Correct.
You can take that down, Mr. Wolf, thank you. We have a moment, Your Honor, to switch topics. Mr. Whiffen, when did you start working on this case? What was the date, approximate date?
On this case or on this exhibit?
On this case.
Approximately September 2023.
So over a year and a half?
Correct.
How many times have you been in Norfolk County?
This is my second time.
So you were here once previously?
Correct.
Do you recall yesterday discussing what you had done with an iPhone, driving around and then moving it with your hand?
Correct. Yes.
In the year and a half that you've been on this case, did you ever take an iPhone and do the same activity on the route that you were discussing yesterday between 34 Fairview and One Meadows?
I actually did it on Sunday night.
I'm sorry?
I did it 2 days ago on Sunday night.
And with regard to your time on this case, what was the result of that?
I object, Your Honor. I'll need to be heard briefly.
I'm sorry?
I object. I need to be heard briefly.
Okay. Come on over, please.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
(Clears throat) Mr. Whiffen, I am now going to proceed to a different topic.
Okay.
Do you recall discussing the Google search, House Long to Die in the Cold?
I do.
And you discussed that in your direct testimony, correct?
I did.
You were a police officer for years before getting into the data forensic analysis of cell phones, correct?
Correct.
You were a response officer of the South Yorkshire Police from 2004 to 2009?
Correct.
You continued policing with the Calgary Police, working patrol, correct?
Correct.
You work frequently with law enforcement?
I do.
Indeed, law enforcement is the predominance of your work, correct?
Probably about 80% of the work, yes.
What percent?
About 80%.
80? Your work is used in investigations for law enforcement, correct?
Sometimes, yes.
In your area of work, you use and apply various forensic methods that are extracted, that data is extracted from a cell phone, correct?
Correct.
And you have various forensic methods to analyze that data, correct?
Correct.
And that data that you analyze is often used by law enforcement in their investigations, right?
It can be, yes.
It can be, but it also is, from your experience, correct?
I'm sorry, are we talking about my actual analysis or analysis that's created by the tools that me and Cellbrite create?
Your analysis.
Okay, my analysis is typically used in investigations, yes.
So it's typically, your analysis is typically used by law enforcement?
On the cases I work, yes.
Right. And you know that is going to be the case oftentimes when you're doing your analysis, correct?
Correct.
And forensic software is used to gain access to people's devices, correct?
Correct.
Such as cell phones, right?
Correct.
So, and there's something called an extraction process from a cell phone that you discussed in your direct testimony?
Yes.
Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I want to cover, because it would be covering old ground, but I want to cover some of it.
Okay.
It's important, is it not, that the extraction process on a cell phone be performed correctly?
It is, yes.
And that's so that the data that's extracted from a cell phone is complete, correct?
Correct.
So that the data is correct?
Correct.
And so that the data is reliable?
Correct.
And data forensic examiners and people in your area of work need to ensure that the extraction file has not been tampered with, correct?
Correct.
Because if an extraction file has the possibility of tampering, then the information and data from it can be unreliable, correct?
Correct.
And there's a generally accepted methodology for how to perform an extraction of data from a cell phone, correct?
Typically, yes.
One of the key ways to determine whether the data extracted from a cell phone is valid and has integrity is to evaluate whether the extraction process created what is called a hash value, correct?
Correct.
And a synonym for a hash value is a hash signature, correct?
Correct.
And a hash value or hash signature, I'm just going to use hash value. Is that acceptable to you?
I'm fine with that.
Thank you. So a hash value is a unique and usually consists of a long string of numbers and letters that's generated from the data file from a cell phone using a computer algorithm, right?
Correct.
And one of the computer algorithms is SHA 256, right?
Correct.
And is it a fair analogy to state that a hash value can be thought of as fingerprint for a data file from a cell phone?
Yes.
And is it also a rough analogy that a hash value can function like the seal on a milk container? In other words, if you open the milk container and the seal's broken, that the same analogy can be provided that if you don't have a valid hash value, then there is a question with regard to the contents of a cell phone, just as there might be concern about contents of a milk carton. Is that a fair general analogy?
Yeah, if the hash doesn't match, then something has changed in the data.
So if the hash doesn't match or you can't determine a valid hash file, it's sort of like opening up a milk container and that seal cap is off, correct?
Okay, I'll accept that.
Thank you. Now, if a data file is altered in any way, the hash algorithm is going to produce a different letter in numeric string than the previous hash value for that same alleged data, correct?
Correct.
So that alphanumeric number is important because it can, if it's different, then it means something happened to that data, correct?
Correct.
And isn't it important for examiners, anybody in data forensics, to know whether or not the data they're looking at has a valid hash value?
It would depend, in my opinion, on the origin of the data.
But you would agree that it's much better to have a valid hash value for data than not, correct?
I'd like to see the hash value match, yes.
You would like to see the hash value match,
yes.
Correct? Now, once data from an iPhone is properly extracted and you get a hash value, then the examiners of the data seek to pass and decode the data to try and make some sense of the data in a more user-friendly format so that a report can be created for investigators, correct?
Correct.
Do you recall preparing a report for the iPhone belonging to Jen McCabe dated December 2024?
I do, yes.
And in that report, you discussed your views of a Google search of house long to die in the cold, correct?
Correct.
And in that report, you rendered various conclusions about that Google search, correct?
Correct.
And you rendered various conclusions about what is called a timestamp?
Correct.
And the timestamp that was in question was 2:27:40 a.m. on January 29th on Jen McCabe's phone, correct?
Correct.
And the question that you were looking at is that timestamp that appeared in the data, that timestamp of 2:27:40 a.m., whether that belonged to the Google search, house long to die in the cold, correct?
Correct.
And you testified yesterday with regard to that very issue, correct?
Correct.
Now, in your report of December 2024, you discussed the hash value of that cell phone, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yesterday in your direct testimony, you didn't mention anything about the hash value with regard to Jen McCabe's phone, did you?
Not in my testimony, no.
The answer is no, correct?
No.
However, isn't it correct that in your report of December 2024, you had an issue with the hash value from the data from that phone?
I didn't have an issue with the hash value at all, no.
So, you didn't note that it was not possible with the gray key extraction as the PDF containing the extraction hash value that it was unsigned? That was not an issue in your report?
The hash value matches, but because I didn't do the extraction, I'm unable to actually validate that was an original hash and hadn't been modified.
Exactly. So you didn't do the extraction, but you couldn't validate the hash value, could you?
No.
So you couldn't determine whether or not any of the data on that cell phone of Jen McCabe had been tampered with, correct?
I take a holistic view of the data and try to find anomalies and didn't see any that raised any flags.
That wasn't my question, sir.
Okay.
I'll try it a different way. You concluded that the hash value was unsigned, correct?
Correct. They were always unsigned. Apologies.
You concluded that the hash value was unsigned, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And you went on, did you not, in your report to say that this hash value could be used as a suggestion of authentication, but cannot be guaranteed 100%, correct?
Correct.
Did you discuss any of that doubt, that suggestion of authentication, but can't be a guaranteed 100% at all in your direct testimony yesterday?
I didn't know.
And again, hash values are very important concepts for data forensic examiners, correct?
For integrity, yes.
Do you know the chain of custody of Jen McCabe's iPhone?
I don't, no.
So you don't know the chain of custody of her iPhone. You have an unsigned hash value and you can't guarantee the hash value authentication, correct?
No.
The objection's overruled.
Not from the hash value, no.
Go back to the 2:27:40 timestamp and the question of whether that timestamp is associated with a Google search, house long to die in the cold. You understand there is a dispute as to whether that search was performed at 2:27:40 a.m. as the timestamp states, or whether that was performed later in the morning, say around 6:23 a.m., correct?
Correct.
You understand there's a dispute?
Yes.
And do you understand that the defense asserts that that timestamp means what it says, the Google search occurred at 2:27:40 a.m.?
Thank you.
I'm going to allow it. Do you understand that?
I do.
I didn't hear your answer, sir.
I understand.
You understand that?
Yes.
So, There are various data forensic tools, are there not, to evaluate what is called an artifact, this timestamp, correct?
Correct.
And those data forensic tools include Cellebrite tools, your company's tools?
Yes.
And some of those Cellebrite tools are called Physical Analyzer?
Correct.
And then you have another tool, I believe, called Insights?
Insights is a suite that includes Physical Analyzer, okay. But yes.
So it's Insights is a suite?
It's essentially the same tool.
Essentially the same tool, so does Insight, well, essentially, but they're two different tools, correct?
They're two different versions of the same tool.
Thank you. Two different versions of the same tool.
Yes.
But there are other tools from other companies, are there not, sir?
There are.
And a competitor of Cellebrite that can be used to analyze that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp and to potentially resolve that dispute of whether the Google search "How long to die in the cold" occurred at 2:27:40 a.m. or later at 6:23 or so a.m. There's other companies and tools that can be used for that, correct?
Correct.
And isn't one of the companies that can be used, a competitor of Cellebrite, called Magnet Forensics?
Correct.
And they have a tool called Axiom, A-X-I-O-M, that evaluates questions such as this, correct?
They do.
And is Magnet Forensics a reputable company?
They are.
Am I correct that yesterday you essentially said that as of today, no Cellebrite tool, no Insight suite such as Physical Analyzer, today shows that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp?
Correct. If you use any version from the last approximately year, that timestamp won't show up.
It won't show up as you sit here today.
Correct.
But that's not always been the case.
Correct.
With regard to Cellebrite forensic tools, correct?
Correct.
As a matter of fact, in the first proceeding in this case, in June of 2024, when you testified under oath, the situation with the forensic tools was Cellebrite Forensics Insights did not show the 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp, but another version of Physical Analyzer did show it, correct?
Correct.
In that second program, that second tool, Physical Analyzer, not only showed it at 2:27:40 a.m., but it showed it as a deleted state, correct?
It's a deleted record, yes.
A deleted record?
Yes.
Did you mention that yesterday in your direct testimony?
I don't believe so.
You don't believe so?
No, we changed it since then.
Exactly, you changed it since then?
Yes.
Your company removed it?
Yes.
After the first trial?
Before the first trial.
Well, you removed it from one tool before the first trial, but you didn't remove it from the other Physical Analyzer program, did you?
Up until the following version was released.
No, I'm talking about the time of trial when you were testifying.
I appreciate that. There's some complexities with how we release the software, which resulted in one being released several weeks later and one being released several weeks earlier.
At the time of trial,
yes,
last year in June, when you were testifying under oath, one of the Cellebrite tools showed the timestamp of 2:27:40 a.m., correct?
Correct.
But that timestamp doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist today, does it?
Correct.
Cellebrite removed it.
Yes.
You could I see Counsel at sidebar for just a minute, please? Sure. Mr. Lassie.
Thank you, Your Honor. So with regard to the first proceeding, there was one Cellebrite forensic tool that still showed the 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp.
Correct.
And it was shown in a deleted state.
The record was deleted, yes.
The record was deleted. And then after that, Cellebrite outright removed the timestamp from so none of its programs had, correct?
Again, if I could explain a little bit about how it works.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
If you could just respond to my question. Is that correct?
The timestamp's been removed, yes.
However, the competitor of Cellebrite that we just talked about, Magnet Forensics Axiom?
Yes.
That program at the first proceeding showed the 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp, correct?
Correct.
And as a matter of fact, as you sit here today, the Magnet Forensics program, Axiom, still shows the 2:27:04 a.m. timestamp, correct?
As far as I know, yes.
And Magnet Forensic Axiom is a reputable company, correct?
Correct.
Cellebrite removed that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp, which is in a deleted state, in response to issues raised in the first proceeding, correct?
It was changed because of the research that I did, and that was verified by the forensic research group.
But the issue arose because of what had come up in the first proceeding, correct?
In the first investigation prior to the proceeding, yes.
In the first investigation in this case, correct?
Yes.
So Cellebrite, after the first proceeding, after the investigation, just outright went and removed the timestamp.
It's not unusual to change decoding.
I just asked whether
yep,
they
removed it. We removed it.
But Magnet Forensic Axiom still shows that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp, right?
Again, they refer to it differently, which is why they can do that.
But they still show it.
They do still show it.
Can you just finish the answer?
Sorry. Just let him finish the answer. Is that what you said, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, my apologies, but I'm having trouble hearing, but I'll pause more just to make sure you're done. In that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp, the dispute is whether it's associated with the search House Long to Die in the Cold, correct?
Correct.
Let's talk a little bit more about the first proceeding in this case. In terms of your testimony under oath in that first proceeding, do you recall stating that it was your opinion as to whether that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp was associated or not with the Google search House Long to Die in the Cold?
I believe so.
Right, so you called it your opinion.
Yes, probably.
You didn't describe it as a fact, you described it as your opinion, correct?
Correct.
Because you realize that there are other fair interpretations of that timestamp and when the Google search occurred, correct?
I think even if I believe it's a fact, it's my opinion.
Right, so it's your opinion.
Yes.
So, do you recall stating that there's plenty of other evidence on that extraction that shows what activity was occurring at 2:27:40? You recall that?
Correct.
And you used the word evidence, correct?
Correct.
But that evidence on the Cellebrite program is now gone, correct?
No.
It's not gone?
It's not gone.
So the 2:27:40 timestamp still exists in Cellebrite programs?
Sorry, are we talking about the additional evidence that shows what happened at 2:27:40?
No, I'm just asking whether I thought we had that clear, but I thought, is the 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp show up on any Celebrate program as you sit here today?
The decoded value does not show a timestamp for that artifact.
Sir, does your work include shaping how examiners will see the data when they open it?
Yes.
So you shape how the data is going to be, correct?
Yes, we have ways to create the data so it's usable, yes.
So the answer so is yes, you shape the data.
Yes.
These various forensic tools, Cellebrite, Insight Suite, including Physical Analyzer, Magnetic Forensics Axiom, these are all tools, and we know that no one has access to the Apple source code on iPhones, correct?
Correct.
And the best source of information about what may be happening inside of an Apple iPhone would be if one could get the source code and look into the source codes to see what's actually happening, correct?
Correct.
So what happens is, in data forensics, because Apple considers it proprietary and people can't access the source code, there's these various data forensic tools that in some ways try to serve as a surrogate, given the fact that there's no access to source code, correct?
Correct.
So the best information would come from the Apple source code, but nobody has access to that, or few people do. Therefore, these other forensic tools are used.
Correct.
So sometimes examiners have to give opinions, like you give, because you don't have access to the source code, correct?
Correct.
So it's your opinion, oftentimes, with regard to ultimate conclusion. Yeah.
Based on research and testing, but yes,
not
it's an 100%
opinion. Absolute certainty because you don't have access to the source code, correct?
Correct.
You have a moment, Your Honor, to switch topics, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Before I do switch topics, a couple points on the 2:27:40 timestamp, if I may, Mr. Whiffen. The Google search in question associated with that timestamp, the dispute over that, is house long to die in the cold, correct?
Correct.
And you understand, sir, do you understand the significance if Jen McCabe made that Google search, house long to die in the cold, at 2:27:40 a.m. instead of 6:23 a.m. Do you understand the significance of that?
Of course.
Sustained.
He said yes, Your Honor.
I'm sorry? I said sustained.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. I didn't hear that.
Jurors, strike any answer that may have come.
What do you understand to be the significance of the dispute over 2:27:40 timestamp?
Objection. Sustained.
Mr. Whiffen, with regard to the 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp, have you looked at any forensic tools to answer that question other than Cellebrite tools and your tool Artex?
I've used Axiom as well.
So you used axiom, and so did you therefore see that that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp still appeared?
Yes.
Did you discuss that with the jury yesterday, that you analyzed the axiom program and that 2:27:40 a.m. timestamp still appears?
I didn't, no.
You did not?
I did not.
Could we please, with the court's permission, put the PowerPoint presentation back up and go to deck 26. Mr. Whiffen, does an iPhone discriminate between whether it's in a car, a bus, a bicycle, or walking?
It can, but I don't have the research on that.
Right. So as you sit here today, you can't say that an iPhone can tell the difference between a car, bus, bicycle, or walking, correct?
The iPhone can, but I haven't researched that data fully enough to understand it forensically.
So you as you said here,
I can't, but the phone can.
Does an iPhone merely register movement? Let me rephrase that. Does an iPhone register movement?
It does.
Do you recall yesterday discussing movement at a speed of about 1.4 miles per hour at 12:24:37 a.m. on
yes.
January 29th, 2022?
I do.
A person walking at a normal to even a slow pace can walk at approximately 1.4 miles per hour. Is that correct?
It sounds reasonable.
And does it sound reasonable that a normal speed of walking is between 2 and 4 miles per hour?
Reasonable.
Switching topics, Your Honor, if I could have a moment. You can take that. Okay, thank you. When you were examining Jennifer McCabe's phone, you used an operating system called iOS 14, correct?
That's one of the versions of iOS I used, yes.
That was one of the versions.
Yes.
Do you understand that Jen McCabe's phone was actually using iOS version 15?
Yes, I do. 15.2.1.
15.2.1. Thank you. And do you recall saying with regard to iOS 15.1, etc., that the iOS operating system, your words, had fundamentally changed, correct?
Correct.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.